College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Negandhi with you. David Pollock joining us in just a few moments. We just hope everybody is safe and healthy during this time. And as promised, what we were trying to do is bring some coaches on to give us their perspective, all parts of the country. Each place is different, each state, each local community. So when it's time to come back, they have different rules and protocols. Our guest today is a great man, Herm Edwards. And he's a dear friend, and he's been fantastic at Arizona State. And we had the chance to talk a little bit about what's going on with his program, why he came back, his goals with the program relating to 18 to 22-year-olds, a little Miracle of the Meadowlands conversation, as well as, you know, the state of the pandemic and his approach and his communication as a biracial child to his team during this time, following the death of George Floyd, as we've seen protests throughout the country. We do hope you enjoy the podcast. Arizona State head coach Herm Edwards joining us here in the College Football Podcast. And coach, we'll talk about your return to the sidelines and how the game has changed. But I want to start with your experience. Son of an interracial marriage, what have you seen? What have you experienced after the death of George Floyd, a 46-year-old unarmed black man who died in police custody in Minneapolis early last week?
That our citizenry, our country, of all different nationalities and walks of life, they're angry. It kind of reminds me of the Rosa Parks situation in December of 1955. She was tired. And she was no longer going to sit in the back of the bus. She sat in the front and she said, I'm just tired. I think our country's tired. It's tired of what we now get to witness because racism has become film and it's on television and it's on phones and everywhere you can see it. And I think the young people in our country, with people like myself from all different walks of life and different age groups, are fed up with it. And when you think about our criminal justice system, Lady Justice has blindfolds on. And that means those scales are supposed to be balanced when it comes to justice. And I think people of color feel like for decades that has not been the case. Whether it's been street justice, police justice, or even when you get into the courtrooms, that scale never seems to be balanced correctly. And I think our country is fed up with it. And this is why you see these protests.
Coach, how do we fix it? Like, I think that, you know, as players, you have voices, as coaches, you have voices. How do you make a big change? How do you make this better?
Well, it starts in the local level. In my opinion, it starts with the governors, the mayors, the city leaders, the police commissioners. If that be the case, if it's bad policing, in some cases it is. That's where the conversation starts. And this is where people need to vote. And they need to hold those civic leaders accountable for their actions of what takes place in their cities and their communities. And until we acknowledge that, you can really have no true change. We have a lot of energy right now in our country. We want to do something. If you want to do something, you need to look in your communities and say, how are these communities being run? And who is in leadership position and what are they doing to make a difference? That's how it starts. And it's a hard conversation, to be quite honest. It's an uncomfortable conversation for some people that don't look of color. They haven't been in those shoes of people of color. They don't understand it, a lot of them. And that's the conversation that needs to be had.
What has worked for you when you need to connect to young people of color on your team? When they're looking right now for leadership and guidance, and, you know, I shouldn't just say young people of color, just the entire team. These are young men who are watching the images. Some are taking part. Some are angry. Some are emotional. What's been your message when they're looking for leadership and guidance?
Have some solutions. You know, I watched this in 1972 when I was a freshman at Cal Berkeley with all the protests. We were just coming out off the civil rights movement. The Vietnam War was in full go. and a lot of protests, a lot of pain and anguish in our country in 1972 when I was a freshman at Cal. So I was an athlete, but I also witnessed a lot of this and sat there and listened to the speakers and the protesters. And this is how you gather information and formulate opinions about the type of life you want to live when you become an adult.
Coach, now not only are we dealing with this, we're also in a pandemic. You're 66 years old and you stay in great shape. I mean, listen, for people that didn't know, Herm is.
You could learn something. You could learn something from him, Kevin, or a lot of things from him. Yes,
You're not kidding. You know, Herm was a teammate of ours at ESPN. And for people that didn't know, this man would get up at 4 a.m. and have a workout before coming in. I mean, he did more before 9 a.m. than many people I've ever met in my life. How have you been handling this situation personally with your age, considering you're in great shape, but also the awareness of your staff and getting ready for your kids to come back?
Well, our whole university, and I think college football in general, now you see some outbreaks. And I think we all anticipate that. What we do when we have those outbreaks, I think, are very, very critical and important. But testing, wearing the mask when you're in buildings, we actually start next week, on the 15th, excuse me, of bringing players in, but not a massive group. Small groups at a time, and we're trying to work our way through this. But, you know, we're going to get tested. We're going to get temperature checks, coaches and everyone. And you make the point, you know, the young people, a lot of them can survive this, as we see, as the numbers state that. It's people with underlying conditions and people at certain age groups have to be more careful and more diligent to make sure that they're taking all the steps to protect themselves, and the players got to protect each other as well. You know, we're trying to do something that there's nothing about football that's social distancing. The last time I checked,
no,
any social distancing football team is not going to win a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
So Herm, how are you handling now meetings, and how do you handle what's your plan moving forward with all this stuff? Because I've been in meetings before with coaches on the phone or a Zoom. And I mean, these kids have a hard enough time paying attention, you know, when you're right in front of them, for God's sakes. Like how are you getting better as a football team? And are you going to be ready to play football in a couple months? How has it changed from the past year?
Well, you just said that the meeting time now is all on Zoom because no one really has had players in the building yet. I was fortunate. I actually got to go in the building. I went to work every day. And with that being said, it is a hollow building. There's no energy in there at all because, as you know, players bring energy along with coaches. So we had a makeshift little bit of a staff in there. We were doing Zoom meetings during the course of the week. Now they'll come back. And you're right. How do we go forward? And there's a lot of thought on until we get into camp mode, because we're just working out right now with the weight coach, trying to get back into condition to even play football. Do we continue with the Zoom meetings and not allow it to happen in the building? I've already come up with an idea once we start the season, and people are going to think I'm crazy. I say, well, if there's going to be no fans in the stadium, then the defense, when they come off the field, just go in the first front row, and we can meet with the players on defense up there so we can keep the sideline kind of separated too.
I love it.
How's that gonna look, right? The defensive coordinator sitting up in the stands and kind of going over what just happened on the field. I said, we can do that now because it's real close to our benches. Walk right up there and go have a meeting and we're good.
Yeah. Communication will be at its all-time peak on the sidelines. No noise. I mean, that's the one thing people don't realize too is with, you know, defense, when you have crowds and the crowd gets loud when you're at home, it's hard to communicate, right? And all that stuff. When you think about injuries, is there something you do differently? Because I know when I came back, it didn't matter how much I lifted weights. When I went on that field and I had to sprint and put a helmet on and do all this different stuff, and you're telling me these dudes have been drinking, like, curling jugs of water and stuff, like, they're not going to be where they've been physically. How do you monitor that?
Well, and you're right. You make a great point, and that's the concern with all the coaches, the preparation time that leads them to go to training camp, and the soft tissue injuries occur. The hamstrings, the groins, Achilles tendons, and this is what you're nervous about. So you got to bring them along slow. We can't get into the mode of, you know, we've missed almost 40, 50 days of work of guys working with a strength coach or somebody involved. And we're trying to get that back. You don't get that back. It's gone. So we're starting over. Now, we had 8 days of spring football, but then after that, we shut down. I mean, March 8th was our last week. So these guys, anything they've done on their own until these gyms started opening up last week. But so we're all starting from the same place, ground zero.
Now, you're entering year three, coming off the 8-win season with wins over Oregon, Arizona, and that bowl victory over FSU. And you got Jaden Daniels, who showed flashes of brilliance at quarterback. We'll get to Daniels in a second, and I know I'm going to compliment Pollock on his podcast, which is very rare. But here's the one thing that's very different here for you, Herm, is you've got a new offensive coordinator in Zach Hill from Boise State, and you got Jaden Daniels entering his sophomore season. How is Hill handling the adjustments of kind of earning the trust from Daniels while installing this offense virtually?
Well, as I said, we had some spring practices, and when I hired Zach, I told him, I said, look, we got a talented guy, and to be quite honest, I told Zach the story when we got Jaden, and I talked to Jaden before the season started, you know, as a freshman starting. I said, look, I'm going to protect you as much as I can. I said, now, you got to prove to me that we want to build this thing around you. And so with that being said, he went out and did what he needed to do. He only threw two interceptions. So this offense is built around the quarterback. It's around his skill set. And when I hired Zach, Zach understood that. He's a former quarterback, has coached a lot of good quarterbacks as well. So he understood, I'm going to build it around, obviously, the quarterback. Now, it's multidimensional as far as personnel groups, formation, fast, slow, get under center. We can go from the gun. A lot of different a multitude of things we can do, and Jaden can handle it. You know, he's a young guy. You speak of Jaden, but when you think of our football team, guys, we've only got seven seniors. That's it. It's all young guys, and it is done on purposely. We're trying to build a program.
Yeah, when I look at Jaden, Coach, the thing that impresses me the most is I saw Michigan State, and I saw, you know, fourth down scrambles when he needed to. But I saw a kid that had elite poise and that the moment never got too big, even if he wasn't having the best game. And I saw a kid that has the ability to buy time and make plays, but he wants to murder you from the pocket. Like, he wants to kill you first with his arm. So, like, I said last year about week four or five, I'd seen enough that I think he's a guy that is in the Heisman Trophy conversation in years to come. Is that what you expect from him?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we got to help him. And that's the thing now. How does he handle all this success that he has earned? And I think he's the kind of guy, very, very, very calm. And that's what I love about the kid. He's very calm. You know, he has this calm demeanor, and we have a really good relationship. So we kind of, our mindset is kind of, we flow on the same on the wavelength, you know, of being calm. And it's funny because you mentioned the Michigan State game. We're sitting there in the last possession, and I said, hey, Five, I called him Five. I said, Five, come here. And he comes over and he looks at me, and I said, you know, this is the last possession, right? And he goes, yeah, well, you know, we need to like score a touchdown if we're going to win this. And he looks at me and he goes, Coach, we're good, Coach. I got you. And I said, well, go get me there. Go do this, right? And he went out and did it, you know. So I said, good for you. And he came back and he looked at me, he winked at me. I said, okay, I got you. I'm feeling you.
That's great. And not many guys have that ability to just come right in as a true freshman and understand that I've got to have poise as well as my skill set. When you look, and with your experience in the NFL and coming back to the college game, how does this game translate to Sundays? And I know I'm putting the cart before the horse here, but we're talking about a guy who's going to be in the Heisman conversation for the next couple years, and we've seen how the game has changed with draft picks and how they evaluate quarterbacks. How does his game translate to Sundays?
Well, if he keeps ascending, obviously, which he will, I think we're trying to build a team around him, and it starts with the offensive line. That's what we have to do a good job of picking up offensive linemen. And we did do that in the fact that we've got two seniors coming in, one from Stanford, one from Texas A&M. But we're young. But I think we've got a young receiver core that he can grow with. It's just experience the more he plays. And I think the bigger the gains for him in big moments and how he does in those moments, that always kind of tells the story at a quarterback. It's the Oregon game, right? Everyone was talking about Herbert, rightly so, was going to be a first-round pick. And I can remember the conversation I had with him. I said, look, you know, this game's on national television because they're looking at this quarterback. And I said, at the end of the game, we want to see who the best quarterback is, right? And he looks at me and says, I got it, coach. I said, okay, go do what you do. And he performed right with that guy. And that's what he liked. He understands the moment. He grasps it. He loves it. He loves the competition of it all.
Well, coach, when you mentioned the offensive line, I'm not going to lie, when you watched you guys, it was not a strength of your football team. And you were at the Under Armour, you know, games every year. And we saw you coach those guys. And all those guys that were at those games, very few of them were going out west. You know, very few of them were. So how do you shift that? How do you build a program at Arizona State that might be a little bit different? You just mentioned, you know, transfer from Stanford, obviously. Like, that's one way you can supplement. But how do you build that up front on the offensive and defensive lines to make it something where people fear it?
Well, obviously, you know, what we've done, we've extended our footprint. And we're in the Midwest and on the East Coast. And it starts very young, you know, the 22 class, 21 class. So we got to already start creating those conversations with these guys. You know, recruiting is about relationships, as you know. And I think the quicker you can form a relationship and talk to them about the program. Now, what helps you is you have a quarterback like Jaden Daniels. There's a lot of people that look at that and go, look, I want to be involved in this. I want to play with this guy, right? And he's that kind of guy. You know, he helps you recruit. We don't have any problem getting receivers. We don't have any problem getting skill guys.
No.
I think the problem for most of the teams, and when you look at the West Coast, you know, our conference, there's some good linemen there, but you don't see a lot of first-round picks coming out of that conference. You don't see three or four of them coming out of that conference every year. And I think that's what the conference really looks at when you think about going and taking the next step. How do you solidify, and you mentioned it, on both sides of the ball, the four guys that can go rush quarterback and the guys that can play on the offensive line that can protect the quarterback.
You mentioned the wide receivers. How about this? The production in the last 2 years when it comes to first-round picks, N'Keal Harry and then Brandon Ayuk this season. What expectations do you have? I know you brought up that they're young. You still have a guy like Fred Darby there. What expectations do you have, and who are the stars that we should be keeping an eye on here? Also, when you lost Benjamin in the backfield.
Well, Darby's a guy, obviously, and we've got some young running backs, some freshman young running backs that are coming in as well. I don't want to mention young guys because they're going to listen to this show. As soon as I don't mention their name, they're going to say, their parents are going to say, well, coach didn't mention your name. So I'll just leave it this. We've got a young crew. Look, I know how to play the game, Jack. I'm not going to get in trouble. Mom ain't going to call me and say, well, why didn't you mention my son? I love them all. I do. And what's unique about this deal, they're all young guys. I mean, Frank's the senior receiver. Other than that, they're freshmen. We got five freshmen coming in now. And the ones that played last year were freshmen. So you're talking about a class of freshmen and sophomore players. You know, I mean, that's our team. I mean, it's like, people say, well, who are the guys? I said, they're a bunch of kids. I mean, that's what they are. But they're going to grow together. They're going to play together. And that's the fun of it all.
Hey, coach, you're starting to pile up. I mean, I don't know if people realize this or not, but the Antonio Pierce's, the Marvin Lewis, like the yeah. Guys in your, like, I spent a lot of time with Marvin Lewis. You know, he drafted me to the Cincinnati
Bengals.
Oh,
yeah, I know. And
I love that man. I mean, he's a phenomenal first class dude. Like, you're starting to pile up a great staff, like, of guys that have a tremendous amount of respect for in the community of sports and the community of football. That has to help recruiting. But talk about some of those guys that you've got like that has moved with you to Arizona State.
Well, AP was one of my first hires. He was actually the first coach I hired. I hired Al Luganville because I knew this was going to be about recruiting. And then I hired AP because he had big, and I've known AP for years, and he was hooked into the Southern California. And yep. so, and plus a good player, a good coach, and I just knew everything about AC. I wanted him on my staff. And so with that being said, that's kind of how the foundation got built. And then from there, you know, Marvin was a consultant last year, and our coordinator got a job. Danny Gonzalez went, you know, got a head job. And then Coach White got a coordinator job. And when that happened, it happened so fast. It happened right after the bowl game. And yep. so Marvin walks into my office and he goes, I got you. And I go, got what? And he says, I'll do it. And I said, you want to be the coordinator? He said, yeah. And I said, okay, well, let me call your wife, Peggy, first, make sure it's okay with her.
Better call Peggy.
You know, I said, you I better know call you Peggy. You want to do it, but I better call Peggy and make sure yep. it's okay, right?
yep.
She gave the blessings to Marvin, but me and Marvin go back, like, similar to me and Tony, over 30 years. I mean, it's kind of funny. You know, I met Marvin at Pitt, at the University of Pitt, when he was working on that staff with Paul Hackett. He was on the defensive side of it. And I was a scout. I was just coming in the league as a scout in Kansas City. And that was one of my schools. And then the next year, 2 years later, I become the secondary guy, and Marvin does an internship there with us, with the Chiefs. And this is when we had Joe Montana, you know, and Bruce Arians was there. I was there, Tony was there, Bill Kyle. We were all on that staff with Marty. But that's how I kind of met Marvin, and we've been friends ever since. So, you know, he had a place in Tempe and, you know, on the off season, and he wanted to help out. And I said, yeah, come on. And so he was an assistant, you know, he was like the assistant to everybody the first year. And then all of a sudden he's the coordinator. I said, really? I said, okay, I'm good.
Hey, so you brought up, Herm, this recruiting thing, and you've hit home runs. I mean, a top 25 class, you've got 8 in early enrollees. I just want to understand the transition for you. You know, at age 66, you were at ESPN for, it felt like, 10 years after you finished coaching the Jets. What's it been like for you to coach this generation? Like, do they know anything about the miracle of the Meadowlands? Do they know that you picked off Joe Namath? Do they know anything about you, or were you the guy on ESPN? How did they recognize you early on when you transitioned?
I was kind of the guy on ESPN. Their parents knew who I was as a player, but they knew that I was the coach at the Under Armour game.
Yep.
And that's where the connection always stayed connected. You know, I coached that game for 8 years. And so, Nikhil was on my team. All right? Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how many kids in that Under Armour game I actually coached. And so they knew I was coaching. They knew I was on television. And when you think about the miracle of the Meadowlands, I mean, that's the thing that is kind of unique, because for me, you know, it happens in 1978. So you can imagine every stint I had as a head coach, whether it was with the Jets, whether it was with the Kansas City Chiefs, and now with Arizona State being a head guy as well. You know, when you go through situations in football, you always go through situations, and before training camp, you kind of go through situations and you're talking and you get into the take the knee, you know, the Hail Mary, the take the knee, all these things, right? And so it's kind of funny, because even in New York, when I took the job, I go, okay, now this is the kneel down formation, you know, and I asked the players, I said, now, why do we do that? Right? Some of them are kind of looking. And so sure enough, I turned the tape on and they see the play and they go, oh, coach, that was you. I said, yeah, that was me. So you can imagine at every level. And so my first year when I go to Arizona State, you know, and we're talking and we're getting ready to, you know, start spring ball or whatever. And I'm going, okay, now we're putting in the victory. And I said, why do people do this? And the guys are kind of looking like, they just assume, well, it's the victory formation. We know how to do that. I said, but why did this occur, right? And sure enough, you turn the tape on, and they start looking, and they go, hey, coach. And I go, I'm sorry. I know it's not in high definition, but that is me. So they see me picking up the ball, and you'd be surprised the laughs you get, man. Oh, really? Back, coach, we want to see it again.
And you know, here's the thing. It sounds like you're having fun and coming back to the game. But big picture, what do you have? Have you thought about, you've got 3 or 4 years, like, what are your goals here when you came back to coach again on the college level?
Well, we want competitive consistency, and we want to be one of those teams in our conference that we're always in the hunt to win the South, and then obviously go to a Rose Bowl. I mean, that is our journey, and that was made clear in my first press conference. And you know, and I think we're starting to develop this thing of consistency. You know, when you look at us the last 2 years, except for one game, all our games generally we've won some by more than one score, but the losses are all one score games for the most part. So we've been very competitive at times. You know, sometimes we didn't finish. Some of that is youth. Some of it's just we weren't talented enough to make the play. But I think our players are realizing that most games are lost rather than won due to error and mistakes. And I think if we can just stay in games, we have the mindset now in the fourth quarter, it's like, we're okay, boys. If we're down a score or whatever, we can get this done. And they believe that. These kids believe that. And that's kind of our deal. You know, we just keep playing. You know, there's a saying, every time we walk in the stadium, the one thing I tell them, leave it on the grass, man. Mm. Whatever you got, you leave it on the grass, and we'll live with the consequences of what happens.
I love your sayings, especially sometimes in this era of not pressing send, buddy. We miss you. We're happy for you. You keep kicking butt and changing lives in the desert, man. So you open up the season against Northern Arizona. I got to tell you, it's great to talk to you because I miss our conversations in the green room. Those were life lessons every single time we had the chance to talk.
Well, I appreciate you, brother, and both you guys. And you guys have been a lot to me as well, man. Our conversations are just life of the life lessons we learn every day when you get in the huddle, man. And I keep saying that about our situation here in America. We got to huddle up, man. We got to huddle up and share our differences and come up with some solutions, man. And then I think we can go forward.
All right. Big thank you to Herm Edwards for joining us to give us his thoughts. When the man speaks, he's coming from so many different angles, and it's always pure. I just sit there and just listen, and I always walk away learning something. We hope you did too. And, you know, I think Jaden Daniels is going to be a superstar in the next couple seasons. We'll see how this plays out, though, with the new offensive coordinator, Zach Hill, bringing what he's bringing from Boise State and maximizing the skill set that Daniels has on the field. Big things for Arizona State. Big things here for the podcast, as promised, for the rest of the summer. We hope to have more coaches joining us to give us their perspective. And a big thank you to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, coordinating all of this as we are enjoying the world of Skype and Zoom and FaceTime. We hope you guys are healthy and safe. Until next time, be well.